Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. We are broadcasting live today from Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. We are broadcasting from the Consortium for Classical Lutheran Education Conference 14, and it's a great day to be here at Concordia Seminary, a beautiful seminary here in St. Louis, meeting with people from all around the country, really all around the world, talking about classical and Lutheran education. We have great guests here with us today. We're going to get into our conversation in just a little bit. I want to say thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University Wisconsin, for supporting this program. To find out more about Concordia University Wisconsin, just go to our website, kfuo.org. Look for the sponsor section there. You'll find Concordia University Wisconsin, CUW, in the sponsor section there. Click on that. That'll take you to their page. Go check it out. Find out about Concordia University Wisconsin at kfuo.org. Joining me today, broadcasting live from Concordia Seminary and the Consortium for Classical and Lutheran Education, we have with us two guests during this segment. Dr. Gene Veith, he's provost at Patrick Henry College and co-author of Classical Education and founding member of the Board of Directors for the Consortium for Classical and Lutheran Education. Dr. Veith, thanks so much for being with us today, and welcome back to Faith and Family.
Oh, good to be with you again.
I think it's probably been about a year since we've had you on Faith and Family, maybe a little bit longer than that, so good to have you with us again, and excited to talk about your involvement with the Consortium for Classical and Lutheran Education, especially the conference today.
Well, good. Glad to be with you. Appreciate your being here and being part of the conference.
Also joining us today for the broadcast, Dr. Christian Kopf. He's the classicist with the University of Colorado in Boulder. Dr. Kopf, thanks so much for being our guest today.
It's great to be here.
And also, might mention, you're the author of The Devil Knows Latin, Why America Needs the Classical Tradition. Does the devil know Latin?
Yes, the devil knows Latin. There was a very wise and witty Catholic priest named Ronald Knox who was asked by a couple to baptize their baby. He said, of course, I'm a priest. And they said, Father, some of our family isn't Catholic. This was back in the 1940s. Would you mind doing it in English? And Knox was usually very gentle, but this was too much for him. And he said, I will not do that. The baby doesn't understand English, and the devil knows Latin.
Well, the title classicist, for our listeners who aren't familiar with classical and Lutheran education, what is a classicist?
Well, I promised I wouldn't give the answer that a classicist is a philologist, but a classicist is someone who studies and teaches the languages and cultures of ancient Greece and Rome, especially ancient Greek and ancient Latin.
Ancient Greek and ancient Latin. Now, yes. I studied Koine Greek. Is that what we're talking about?
Well, when you're a hardcore classicist, that's considered baby Greek, because there's no optative. Again, there's no time to explain what the optative is.
Take up the whole program.
That'll be the whole program. Will be what's the optative, and you'll wish I hadn't, which is an optative joke, by the way. There aren't many optative jokes, but that's one of them. And the New Testament is written in ancient Greek, the language of the Mediterranean, the lingua franca of the Mediterranean, but also Plato, Homer, the great Greek tragedians. These are all written in Greek, and they're part of our tradition. It's why our ministers learn Greek when they come to our seminaries, like the one here in St. Louis and in Fort Wayne.
Now, as a classicist, then, you teach students at the University of Colorado Boulder. What vocations are they going into? All vocations, or specifically in education?
Classics is really the fundamental liberal arts education, and you can go into law, where most of the vocabulary is Latinate. You can go into medicine, where Greek and Latin vocabulary. You can go on into publishing. You can get all kinds of jobs, relatively few. I wish more went into teaching, because we need more Latin teachers. But most of them do not go into education per se. Most of them go into regular jobs where they have the vocabulary, they have the command of language to be successful in almost every profession.
Dr. Veith, you've served as the founding member of the Board of Directors for the Consortium for Classical and Lutheran Education, and we are now at this conference number 14, is that correct?
At least so.
What is the purpose of this conference?
Well, there's education in this country is in a state of kind of collapse in a lot of places. Not just the academic achievements are falling apart. You have the controversies over how to teach. You have the controversies over the new core curriculum that wants to teach students how to read government publications better instead of their heritage in the great works of the past. And a lot of people have been searching for an alternative, and many people have been rediscovering the kind of education that gave us basically Western civilization. Mm-hmm. For Lutherans, it's especially significant because what we are describing is classical education, which includes studying the ancient languages, but much more than that. The liberal arts does not just mean the humanities. The reason it was called liberal is this was the art, the kind of education to prepare people for freedom, mm-hmm. to form citizens, to form effective church members, to form effective family members, to form effective people in all vocations. And Luther started the whole concept of universal education to try to teach people how to read the Bible for themselves. He didn't just open Bible reading schools. He opened classical academies where they were studying language and studying mathematics and studying history and developing all of their mental powers. And this was a kind of education that started with the Greeks and the Romans and continued among the Christians and was greatly accelerated during the Renaissance and the Reformation. And again, this is Western education. So a lot of people over the past several decades have been rediscovering classical education, opening classical schools, doing classical curriculum in homeschools. And as Lutherans, in our parochial schools, this is our heritage. This is the way parochial education was always done. New book by Thomas Korchak, who's here speaking at our conference, defined the Lutheran educational tradition as classical education plus catechesis. So it's just that there are a lot of Lutheran parochial schools that are rediscovering this very rich, very humane, very creative approach to education. And this is a conference where we're all coming together to learn about it more deeply.
What drew you into classical education? What was your first involvement with classical education? Was that what you grew up with?
No, not at all. I suppose when I was in college, I was interested in so many different things. I studied literature and history and philosophy and Greek and German. And I found myself, I suppose, with more of a classical education, not even knowing what that was. It was as a professor at Concordia Mequon, your sponsor here, that I really started reading about classical education. Colleges are built around the liberal arts to this day, and we still have the language. I was the dean of arts and sciences at one point at Mequon, and arts and sciences, these are liberal arts kind of terms. And some colleagues there and I were interested in studying this more deeply, seeing what was involved with it. So that got me deeper into it, and reading books like Christian Kopp's his work, The Devil Knows Latin, and many others, really helped me see just what a vital approach this is. But I did not know that it was going on in the grade school level, mm-hmm. on the grammar school level, until I had a student in one of my adult learning classes, again, another shout out to the sponsors of this show, Concordia, Wisconsin, is an adult ed class that I was teaching, degree completion class, and this person was starting a classical Christian school, and I had no idea what that was or what if he was serious about it. It turns out he was, and it was Andrew Kern, who not only started a school, went on to be a very key figure in the classical Christian education movement. And so we collaborated together on a little book to tell people about what this is and how to implement it. And it just went on from there.
Dr. Kopf, where did it begin for you? Where was your first involvement with classical Lutheran education?
I attended an old-fashioned classical prep school, St. Paul's School in Garden City, Long Island, because I didn't behave myself in the eighth grade, and the guidance counselor called on my parents and said, I'm a professional guidance counselor. I know how to handle the syndrome of broken home, poor grades, troublemaker. I do not know how to handle the syndrome of secure family, excellent grades, troublemaker. And I said, what to do? Put him in a private school where they can handle people like him. And so I was terribly punished. I'd probably be a wealthy finance capitalist today. But instead, St. Paul's School had a Latin requirement. My Latin teacher agreed to meet us before chapel and teach me Greek if I'd show up. So, you know, my life was ruined at an early age, all because of a little misbehavior in the eighth grade. It's a tragic story. I'm about to burst into tears as I tell it to you. Because once you have this experience, you don't want to give it up.
So did it solve the problem?
It absolutely solved the problem. I was too busy doing homework. I had no time to misbehave. That's why I was misbehaving. I was bored and didn't know what else to do. So, and by the way, nowadays you see the problems in public schools. They're terrifying. I mean, this was, you know, speaking out inappropriately, laughing at the wrong time. That was misbehavior back in that distant period. Civil War solved all those problems.
So as you were speaking out and you found yourself bored as a student, did the Latin, the Greek, did you find that rewarding? Did you find it engaging?
Learning them is challenging and exciting. It makes your English better. And then when you actually read Cicero and Virgil, Xenophon's Anabasis, and Homer's Odyssey, it's not like anything. The one thing I have in common with J.R. Tolkien, he says, his first understanding of great literature was reading Homer. And I can say, well, I do have one thing in common with Tolkien.
So tell us about the conference today. What types of things are we going to learn about at the conference? It's been going on since yesterday, going into tomorrow, I believe. Dr. Veith, what will participants learn here at this conference?
Well, there are a lot of teachers in classical schools that are here, a lot of administrators, a lot of homeschooling families. So we have tracks really designed for everybody. We have some things on the theory and practice of classical education for people to whom this is brand new. We have kind of deeper subjects for those who've been at it a while. The CCLE, the organization, now has an accreditation process to accredit schools. And a lot of that is helping them to become truly classical. We have some teacher preparation certifications that we're doing. So there are different tracks and different kinds of sessions for all of those things. Somebody pointed out that in a lot of conferences, we go and learn that it's important to do classical education and so on, but sometimes there's not much going on to sort of give classical education to people who haven't had it, which is virtually everybody. So we're having some sessions. I'm doing one on kind of great works of literature. I'm doing one on George Herbert, the great Christian writer, and I'm going to sort of model how to teach literature in a classical way with attention to the form of it. And Christian's going to be talking about Tolkien. So classical education does a lot with content. And so we want to have a lot of rich content for people to sort of feast on as much as we can.
When thinking of, for those who aren't familiar with classical education, when thinking about this picture in their mind of what classical education is, some might picture it as very rigid, very stoic, and maybe kind of stuffy. What's your response to that? I'd like to hear from each of you about that.
Well, that is such a misunderstanding. Classical education is not the school marm. It's not the one-room schoolhouse. It's not the taught to the tune of the hickory stick. That was already getting away from classical education. Luther talks about the teacher needs might have to have a switch, but needs to have an apple too, with children. And a lot of the classical education, including Luther and Melanchthon, talk about the pleasure of education. Classical education is a humane approach. It respects the humanity of the young immortal souls that are in our classes. It's so different from the modernistic, reductionistic, crack the whip sort of approach, just as it's different from the touchy-feely, get in touch with your feelings, it's all just about you and your emotions. It's a holistic approach. We just heard a session from an outside scholar that talks about this rigidly objective approach to teaching language. It's all just about logic, and then alternative, it's just all about emotions. And he talked about how a classical view of language embraces all of those. Mm-hmm. So classical education is, I think, the most humane approach to educating human beings. That's what it's all about.
Dr. Kopf, you mentioned earlier that this was, for you, this was something that was engaging because you found yourself bored with the education that you were in before.
For good students, classical education involves challenge. Now, it's true, there's a great tradition of classical education, which I once heard summarized as Latin and the rod, which I actually have been looking for a school that wants it as a Latin motto. I worked at Lingua Latina Vergacua, Latin and the rod. It's usually, you know, virtue, Christ and virtue, or virtue and learning. But the fact is, education has been made boring by an attempt to dumb it down for people who need a different kind of training. And classical education educates the whole person, educates the arts of language and the arts of mathematics, educates them in the past, not only of the individual, but of our society and of our civilization. It reminds us that we have a religion based on a 2,000-year-old book. This is not something that's just being churned out from headquarters. Though sometimes it seems that way on a bad day, that's not true. It's based on a very old book, and our classical tradition is based on very old books. And ultimately, you learn to discover that that is exciting, that this great scene in 1984 where Winston Smith discovers it's not the future, it's the past. The past is more important. And believe me, kids find this exciting. You hardly ever have to use the rod on them. Oh, I'm just kidding, guys.
Yeah. Dr. Veith, you mentioned that it's a very humane education. It's not about, as you described, the touchy-feely, but it's not an education void of feeling, is it?
No, on the contrary. Feeling has to be taught, too. Feeling richly and feeling deeply. That's something that also takes learning. And when you study the great works of literature, they're so moving. When you study rhetoric, to how to appropriately engage the feelings of your audience, that honors feeling in a way that isn't just letting go the passions and every which way. You never get anywhere, even in the passions, if you do that. And so it's a comprehensive education. It's academically superior, and we have an abundance of evidence. Just about every school that adopts this kind of curriculum scores at the top of any standardized test anyone would care to throw at them. Now again, classical engineering, we don't like testing in that way, and that it's reductionistic and it's not classical. But I say, well, all right, but let's try it and let's see what it does. And even in the terms of the standardized test, classically educated children just perform so well academically. And it's not just the humanities, mathematics and science grew out of learning how to think in the way that a good classical education mm-hmm. will teach you how to. And they, and because it's so stimulating, and it takes students so far, it really, again, becomes an enjoyable way to capture the enjoyment of learning. I think it's an important teaching technique. And you see that in classical education in ways that you aren't seeing it in a lot of the progressive education that, again, is often so dumbed down and so condescending and has such a narrow view of human beings that no wonder it doesn't get any very far. And no wonder that kids act up in class because they're not engaged in anything. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Cuff, I want to ask for the parent who doesn't have a classical education background and thinking about maybe sending their child to a classical Lutheran school or homeschooling and using a classical approach, thinking about Latin and or Greek and being intimidated by that because they don't have that they don't have that experience. Sending my child to a classical school where he or she is learning where he's learning Latin, Greek, and then coming home and talking about it, and I don't know anything about it. What are your words of advice to that parent with about 3 minutes left?
Well, one of the things that I always remember from one of the classic works of American literature, The Godfather, is the great scene where Michael tells his father, you know, my son's smarter than I am. And it happens to every parent, of course. And it happens sooner or later at a certain stage. We probably, most of us who are parents remember that moment. Classical education is set up to give kids that the knowledge they need and to form their loves in a way that are appropriate and good. I was going to mention in response to or in addition to Dr. V's comment, there's a great passage in Dante's Paradiso where he describes human beings as the creatures that have intellect and love. Le creaturi hanno intelletto e amore. And one of the great things about classical education is it shapes loves as well as intellect. And that's something that they don't even think of offering in other versions. And that's what every parent, you don't have to know Latin to see that you're, not just your child's vocabulary, but the things they love are also appropriate and right. And that is something every parent can see without knowing the foreign languages, without having studied advanced mathematics.
Very good. And what are you speaking on at the conference today?
I'm talking about J.R.R. Tolkien as a product of classical education. He had a great classical education. He was not only was he a philologist, excuse me, a student of language, but he also wrote the best-selling novel of the 20th century, Lord of the Rings, and among the best-selling movies of the 21st century, which he didn't know about when he probably would have been surprised that he found out about it. And he had a great classical education. And it made him both wonderful in his academic field and made him creative beyond imagination.
Very good. Well, for the first-time person, Dr. Veith, with just about a minute left, for the first time attending this conference, what are the things that maybe they don't have any classical education, but they're intrigued by it, first time, what are the things that they would gain from this or the things that they should check out of this conference? What are the sessions they should attend?
Well, there are some basic things about the elements, about the trivium, grammar, logic, rhetoric, and so on that will get you started as far as what it's about. We've got some great teachers showing and modeling how this plays out in the classroom. So those would be good. And the other thing is just learning and meeting other people who are doing classical education, mm-hmm. not just professors and teachers, but other interested parents, other interested families. And just hear from them, their experience with classical education.
We've been talking with Dr. Gene Veith, Provost at Patrick Henry College and a founding board member, or member of the Board of Directors for the Consortium for Classical and Lutheran Education. Dr. Veith, thanks for being here today.
My pleasure.
We've also been talking with Dr. Christian Kauf, classicist with the University of Colorado Boulder. Thanks for being our guest today.
Great to talk to you.
More Faith and Family up next on Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Sometimes tragic stories have happy endings, like this one in Lubbock, Texas. Planned Parenthood had an abortion mill in Lubbock, but an organization called Generation Covenant took it over. One of the requirements was that the entire board of directors of Planned Parenthood had to resign and the abortion mill closed. Since that's now happened, Generation Covenant has broken ground on remodeling the former Killing Center. What's especially joyful about this situation is what they plan to do with the newly remodeled building. They'll provide assistance for after-school students who have learning difficulties. These are the very children Planned Parenthood goes after for abortion. That is, those who don't measure up to their vision of perfection. May God richly bless this new endeavor.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Two pastors, one an Italian wise guy, and the other a Ukrainian academic. What happens when you put them in the same room with no script and a bunch of sound effects? Well, you're just going to have to tune in to find out. The God Whisperers on Worldwide KFUO, Thursdays from 2 to 3 p.m. Central. They're fun-loving, a little off the wall, but always solidly Lutheran. You will learn something every time or double your money back. It's okay to enjoy being Lutheran.
I'll never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
It was a moment that changed my life.
It was still at the heart of the storm when we arrived in a convoy of Humvees.
These people had been there for hours, all scared and on the verge of hypothermia.
We dug them out, got them home safely.
That's what we train for, moments like this.
In the Guard, you serve your community as well as your country. Go to NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Missouri National Guard, aired by the Missouri Broadcasters Association and this station.
Do this again.
You'll do what I say, Clapham.
Clapham has an unusual father, a father who makes him steal.
I'll distract the clerk. You swipe him.
But Clapham also has an unusual friend named Harry.
You can't imagine what God has planned for you. He's going to use you to do great things.
But this friendship meets the ultimate test when Clapham is forced to steal from Harry's family. The Boy of Mount Rigi on the next Lamplighter Theater.
Saturday mornings at 11 on Worldwide KFUO.
So, Justin, I was playing that video game Forest Brigade, and it was pretty cool. I was running down this, like, digital path, and I met this digital frog, and he was all like... Then I went playing in this virtual stream where this water, it looked almost real. It was this whole electronic forest world. So what did you do?
Well, my parents took me to the forest, the real forest, where I was running down this, well, it was an actual path. Then I saw this real-life frog. It was all like, ribbit, and I saw an owl too. Then I played in this amazing stream with water around my ankles, like wet water. Then me and my sister and my parents sat around a campfire and told cool stories all night long.
Oh, that's pretty cool, too.
This weekend, unplug. Getting closer to nature can get you closer to your family. To find the forest nearest you, go to discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates, and glad to be broadcasting live from the Consortium for Classical and Lutheran Education Conference at beautiful Concordia Seminary here in St. Louis. Joining me for this segment, we have Joanna Hensley. She is a Latin teacher at Wilson Hill Academy and a home educator as well. Joanna, thanks so much for being our guest today.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks.
It's kind of fun to get to have some of this one-on-one time with a mom who's an educator, a Latin teacher at a school, but also a home educator. We've got to talk with the university professors. Now we get to talk with the folks who do this at home with the children they see every day.
Yeah, this is really where the rubber hits the road, isn't it? We can think about all of these lofty ideas, but actually implementing them with mm-hmm. your own kids is a different story. And we're inspired by these ideas that the college professors have, but putting it into practical application, it can be a bit tricky sometimes.
Absolutely. And so now we get to dig into your family and talk about all the fun stuff with your family and about being an educator at home, but also as a Latin teacher. Tell us about that, your experience as a Latin teacher. How did you come about being a Latin instructor at Wilson Hill Academy?
Well, it's really funny. About 15 years ago, I was a college student, and I was a Latin major. And about that time was when, you're thinking about what you want to do when you go out in the real world and all of this. And my parents always invited me and encouraged me to follow my interests. And my interests happened to be classics and Latin. And most people would think of that as being probably the most useless thing you could ever study in your life. But I was very fortunate that before I even graduated from college, I already had a job lined up in my field teaching Latin. So that's a shout out to all of you classics majors out there. There's a lot of people who need Latin teachers these days, thanks to classical education. So that's how I got started teaching Latin, and I've been doing that ever since, both in traditional brick and mortar schools. That's how I got started. Also working as a tutor for homeschool families, and once I had a family myself, I needed to move out of the classroom because I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom who could still bring home some bacon to help our family. And so that's how I got involved with online Latin education, and that's what I'm doing now for Wilson Hill Academy. It's an online school, and I'm the Latin teacher.
How do you teach Latin online? Some might think, okay, I could see in a classroom teaching Latin face-to-face, but online, does that present some challenges?
Well, it does, and yet it doesn't. It's funny to think about a technology so new with a language so old, and so you might think that it wouldn't go together very well at all, but you know, we use the technology that allows me to talk live to the students, so they're synchronous classes, and we can see each other through our webcams, we can talk to each other through our microphones, and anything that I write on my computer screen shows up on theirs. And in that way, not only are we able to learn Latin and discuss Latin, but we're also able to make real friendships, and I'm able to get to know the kids and their families too. So it's really, I think, quite remarkable how even in the online setting, you do have that community feel that you would have in a brick and mortar school.
And you probably get to reach a broader audience as well.
Yes, absolutely. I've had students from all over the world, from as far away as Australia, certainly every state in the Union, you know, Alaska or Hawaii, these great vacation destinations. So that when we travel, we oftentimes will stop and stay with a student family. And that is a lot of fun to see them face to face when we've spent so many months together going over our Latin.
Now, your students in Australia, are they logging in at 2 in the morning to study?
Well, that's part of it. And it's funny the way that the time zones work. You know, the time zone can be either a blessing or a curse. And I live in California, but my school is on an East Coast time zone. But it works to our advantage because a class that starts at 8 o'clock on the East Coast, that's 5 o'clock in the morning for me, but I can teach all my classes before my husband goes to work. So that's the way I'm able to juggle being a teacher still, but also homeschooling my children when my husband is off working there. He's a professor at Concordia in Irvine, so that's how we manage it.
And I understand the early morning thing, try to get things done before the rest of the world wakes up.
Exactly, exactly.
So Latin at 5 in the morning. You know, we could have done, if I knew Latin, we could have done the interview in Latin today, you think? I don't know if that would have been too beneficial for our listeners that don't know Latin. So Latin at 5 in the morning, how many students are you talking with or working with at that time? Well, 8 o'clock in the morning for the East Coast students.
Well, a class usually has about 20 students.
Wow.
We try to keep the classes small, but that's a good full class, and I've had hundreds of students this way going through the years, and it's really quite a popular program.
What are some of the ages of the students that you're working with online? We'll get to home here in just a little bit.
Sure. Well, online, most of my most of my Latin students start around seventh grade. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if they decide to start Latin later, then I have older students.
Sure.
But seventh grade is about when I have them working through secondary Latin. And most of my students come to me having already studied primer Latin with their mother, usually, or father at home.
I see. Well, and speaking of home, let's talk about home now, too. You're a home educator as well. And tell us about your family.
Well, I have five children. The oldest is seven. The youngest is 9 months old. And they are all as sweet as they can be and absolutely perfect. And we're just one of those perfect families. Of course, that's not true. It couldn't be further from the truth. We've got a lot of challenges. My oldest son is special needs, autism spectrum kind mm-hmm. of stuff that we're dealing with. Language doesn't come naturally for him. So that's a particular challenge that we have. My other school-aged daughter is very bright and inquisitive and loves language. So I feel like just in my own children, I kind of have that, you know, the whole spectrum of things. And I've only been working with those two doing formal schooling so far, but so far so good.
Now, are they learning Latin as well?
Well, not quite yet. Different people have different ideas on how to start this, but I really want them to have a solid English foundation before we get into the Latin. And so with my son particularly, because his challenge is in language, we're really hitting English hard. But I tell you what, I am going to do Latin with him. I am inspired by Cheryl Swope's book. And this is such an important book for everybody to read. This book, perhaps you have it on the Simply Classical, of course. Simply Classical, mm-hmm. This is a book that I think you said before was
sure,
on your website.
Yeah, we've talked about it before.
Mm-hmm. And it's just so inspiring, this idea that every child, even the ones that struggle, even the ones that have special needs, the ones that are brilliant, the ones that are not so brilliant, every child really does benefit mm-hmm. from this classical education. And I've seen that work with my son with special needs. Absolutely, I have seen it. And his doctors have seen it too. When we go in for the assessments and he's coming out above grade level with, you know, all of
sure.
these academic scores, even though he ought to be struggling far more.
Give us an example, maybe. What is something that he loves studying or that he's just really excelled at?
Okay, well, I'll give you an example that has to do with language, because so much of classical education at that grammar mm-hmm. level is about language. And that's also his particular struggle point is with language. So the challenge that we work with is that he has the oral communication skills of someone who's 3.5 and he's 7. The great opportunity that we have is by teaching him grammar. His favorite subject is grammar, would you believe it? By teaching him grammar, he recognizes nouns and verbs and prepositional phrases and adjectives and adverbs, and he can show me that this adverb modifies this verb and that this adjective modifies this noun, and he enjoys it so much that if we're sitting at a restaurant, he will take his notebook and number on the side of the paper 1 to 10 and hand it to me and ask me to write sentences so that we can do our grammar. He recently was on a very long flight with my husband. They traveled earlier this summer. He was doing the same thing on the airplane. He was just, oh, let's do sentences. So he enjoys it. He mm-hmm. likes it. And by teaching him this grammar, we can also see the improvement in his oral communication, right? It helps that
sure.
very deficit, because now he'll bring in prepositional phrases now that he knows what they are. Mm-hmm. Through his grammar lessons, he brings that in orally too, and that's exciting to see.
It takes me back to what Dr. Kopf was saying in the first segment about this type of education. Classical education really engaged him more. He wasn't challenged. He was finding himself bored with the education he had before, and then once he had the opportunity to study Greek and Latin, that he found it far more challenging. He didn't have time to misbehave either.
Oh, I just see that so much, both in my family and with my students. You know, the enemy is boredom. Mm-hmm. You never want anybody to get bored. And as a classroom teacher, that's just survival 101. Don't let your students get bored. And as a mother, I think the same thing is true. And classical education, you know, these tools that we have in place, they really do help us to meet the child where he is and give them the challenge that he needs in particular, and then he can run with it.
That's encouraging to hear, because I think there are misconceptions about classical education being boring, and what you're describing it is not boring at all.
Oh, I don't think so. I think that it is stimulating for both the teacher or parent and the child, because we're learning about some really neat stuff. And I think it's the endless workbooks and color pages and, you know, kind of busy work. That's what makes a child not want to learn and not learn. But when you're giving such good content, I think that it's good for the entire family.
And what I'm hearing is that there are challenges that, well, I guess setting self-challenges, setting goals for himself, as you were talking, describing your son's situation at a restaurant or on a flight. He wanted to be challenged. He said, you know, give me some sentences so that I can work on them. And that's encouraging.
It is. And it's neat to see also as a Latin teacher, because sometimes we think about Latin as the scary, hard, dead language that no one would ever want to learn. And that if you truly love your children, you would never torture them with Latin. But we have this kind of attitude, don't we?
Absolutely.
And it's a wrong attitude, because I think that students want to do hard things. They want to be challenged. And we kind of, as parents and as teachers, think we love our kids, we'll go easy on our kids, we want them to be happy. But having them be happy isn't by going easy on them, right? We want to keep them challenged. And if we set the standard high, oftentimes they surpass it, because children are amazing that way, and God has created amazing children.
That's a great example that you've given with your son, and how he accepts the challenges and excels and surpasses the standards that you set. As a home educator, as a homeschool mom, I'm sure that those listening who are thinking about home education and or homeschooling and classical education, thinking, you know, we have multiple kids, there's no way I could manage all that. How do you stay on top of that? You're a teacher for an online school, for an online academy, you teach Latin, and you have five children, two who are school age. How do you manage all that and not pull out your hair?
Well, I do pull out my hair.
Oh, okay. It doesn't look like it.
It's funny, because I wake up for a 5 o'clock class. I don't get a lot of sleep, and that is hard. And I'm not going to lie to you, it is hard. I have a very supportive husband who is completely invested in our family. Adam is, you know, sacrifices his free time for the sake of me and for the children. And it really is that team effort where you see, you know, husband and wife, father and mother, both putting it all into the kids. And I wouldn't have been able to do it. I can't do it without Adam.
How important is it? Now, do you go full steam year-round, or do you take breaks? I mean, is it important for you to have some time, especially for your homeschool students, to have some time away from studies?
Oh, absolutely. You know, when you have your students who are your children at home, and you have them 24/7, 365.
My mom's my teacher.
Exactly. My mom's my teacher. My house is my schoolroom. Really, my world is my schoolroom. And that doesn't mean that we turn everything into a worksheet, right? It means that we turn everything into a time of exploration. And it may be that we do math by going to the grocery store and counting the apples that I put in the bag. Or it may be that we, do things out in the world. We go to the beach in order to learn about the ocean. We live in Southern California, so we actually do that instead of just looking at pictures on a book. You know, when you are not limited to the 9 months of school, and you're not having to stop learning at 3 o'clock because that's when the bus comes, I think that we can take a lot more breaks and have a more laid back kind of learning environment, so that frankly, I'm not sure my children know that they're learning half the things that they're actually learning, because there's not that now we are in school time. It's just, this is life, we're curious, and we learn.
So there's more of a love for learning and they enjoy learning rather than considering it a labor or something that they maybe even detest.
Right. That's my hope. That's my goal. And if I sense drudgery, I back off. And I can do that because as their mother, I know them well enough to sense that drudgery. I'm not trying to move 20 students at a time through a brick and mortar school system. I have the flexibility with my schedule that I can just back off for a while. Maybe I try in 20 minutes, maybe I try in 2 weeks to come back to whatever we left behind. But I know that if we just keep at it, I think that we can instill that relaxed atmosphere where they love learning and that the pressure for learning more comes from their own enthusiasm, not from me trying to meet a schedule.
What I hear you saying is that flexibility is really important in home education, and especially in classical education as a home educator, that taking advantage of the world around you, let the world around you be your classroom, use those opportunities as teachable moments, but be flexible too. Don't feel like you have to make everything a lesson.
Right, because I have to be flexible, and that's for me. It's not even for my children. It's just for my sake. I'm tired, and I've worked my work day before my children even get up. That means I still have my housekeeping responsibilities. I still have try to have some semblance of a social life, right? I mean, these are all demands that I think every mom has. And so we have that flexibility so that the mother can cope with all of these different challenges. And my dining room table is messy kind of all the time. There's always a pile of books kind of everywhere. Lego end up in the oddest places in my home, but
and
that's
they
the
hurt
way
when you step on them.
I know from experience. But you know, that's the way we roll, and we're happy together, and we are learning, and we're learning to love and serve our neighbor, and love our Heavenly Father in doing so, and that's kind of what we're after.
What about some resources or tips for those who are just being introduced to classical education that might think that they want to try this as a home educator?
Well, Cheryl Swope's book, Simply Classical, I just cannot say it enough. It is the best introduction to what we're talking about. Also, conferences like this one, CCLE, has been fantastic for people that are just getting started. I'm trying to drum up interest for other moms and dads who are interested in meeting together online throughout the year to study Latin in a slow enough pace that it doesn't take over their busy lifestyle, but so that the parents can learn Latin and then teach it to their children. I think that's really important to be lifelong learners. That's probably my best advice to give, is just to make yourself, remind yourself that you are a lifelong learner and take every opportunity to read these books and think about ways that you can apply them then in your homeschool. And it's not too hard to do. It's completely overwhelming. I know it is. Even I am overwhelmed when I think about it. But with God, nothing is impossible. And absolutely, I have to tell myself that every single day.
And you're presenting at the conference this week. What are some of the things that you're presenting on?
Yeah, I'm talking about grammar. And we're talking about grammar both in terms of nouns and verbs and all of that fun stuff, but also that grammar stage of working with younger students who are focusing on memory work and learning facts that will be used later on in their education. So I'm talking about grammar today. I'm also talking about the middle school mind. It's a very interesting and mysterious topic, the middle school mind. But I've been working with middle schoolers for the last 15 years, really, and enjoy that age group so much. So I'm hoping to talk about all the reasons why I love middle schoolers.
What do we need to know about the middle school mind?
Oh, you know, sometimes I think middle schoolers have a bad rap because they're going through a lot of changes, and that's happening physically. Mm-hmm. It's happening mentally, making that jump from grammar school where everything is a memorized answer, and as long as you get that answer on the paper, it's considered correct. You know, moving from that kind of paradigm to one where you have to understand all those things that you've memorized and now express things in your own words and really understand relationships, not just relationships between people, but mm-hmm. that's a big part of it, but also relationships between ideas, relationships between, say, the American Revolution and the revolution in France, or whatever you might be studying in history. It can be a hard jump to go from grammar to logic stage. And I think if we can be aware of just that challenge that they face, we can be all the more compassionate as teachers and of parents of middle schoolers.
What are you looking forward to most, or maybe it's already happened, what are you looking forward to most at this conference this week?
Okay, at this conference, the thing I love the best, even though there's wonderful presenters, even though there's wonderful things to learn, I love talking to the moms in the hallway. And sometimes it's talking to that other mom who had to take her baby out, because I've also had to take my baby out because they're both fussing. You know, sometimes those are the opportunities that I enjoy the most, because I'm able to talk to other moms who are doing it, who are struggling with the same things I struggle with, but have found this solution or have this idea, or maybe they've thought about this curriculum and can tell me what they think so that I don't have to research it myself. That's just so valuable. The conversations in the hallways, for sure.
So those conversations, that networking, connecting with other moms and other parents, that other educators, having that connection, I'm sure is valuable. As you're thinking about it. Now, I realize that today is a weekday. Are you on break from the Academy from teaching Latin this week, or should we not be telling people that?
Well, thank goodness it's summer, and uh-huh. so we do have a bit of a summer break. My summer Latin class doesn't start until the end of July, so I think we're okay for a little while.
Okay, so you're not in trouble. You're not playing hooky today and getting in trouble for not teaching.
No.
Now, what happens when you have to, you know, when something happens at home? I'm sure that's a question that many might have for the mom who is working, like, you know, working a, I don't know, a morning job. I wouldn't say a day job, a morning right. job, you know, and then also educator at home. What happens when mom gets sick, or, you know, something comes up, a family issue comes up, and you can't necessarily stay on top of all of those tasks mm-hmm. in a day?
You know, this is where the homeschool community really does come together, because there's families from our church with homeschooling teenagers that can show service to my family by taking care of us when we're in need like that, and the other homeschooling families in our area are fantastic that way.
So what I'm hearing you say is that you can't do it alone. Having the support mm-hmm. of others and connecting with others who are home educators is really valuable to you.
Absolutely. And, you know, my sister, Mary Murby, she's homeschooling children who are about the same age as mine. And we share curriculum and mm-hmm. we share ideas, and we absolutely call each other sometimes in tears because we're, like you said before, tearing our hair out. But that's part of the experience. You know, I went to a session yesterday where Glenda Mummy was saying that, you know, that's your life. You can't let the distractions convince you that you haven't done what you needed to do that day. Those distractions, those are what you're supposed to do today. Mm-hmm. That's what God's put before you, and it's absolutely frustrating, and it's hard, and we take up our cross, and we follow Him, and He's the one that gives us strength to do it.
Absolutely. Amen. Well, how encouraging is this, just to be able to hear from you, someone who's out in the, you know, but like you say, where the rubber meets the road, a mom who's doing it all, who's teaching at home online for students teaching Latin and also teaching her own kids at home. Thanks for the great example and for sharing your story with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It's been a pleasure speaking with Joanna Hensley, home educator and teacher at Wilson Hill Academy Online. Thanks so much for being our guest on Faith and Family and letting us be a part of the Consortium for Classical and Lutheran Education.
It's been a pleasure.
Well, folks, this concludes our broadcast from the Consortium for Classical and Lutheran Education Conference here at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. We've got more great programming coming up on Worldwide KFUO. Stick around for the Bible study up next.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at kfuo.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.